This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents How to Be a Boss, A Guide to Conquering Life. This is the author, Lily Singh. Dedicated to the person I was 6 years ago. I told you to keep going. Thanks for listening. Introduction. Holy crap, I wrote a book. Okay, wait, let me back up here. Hi, my name is Lily, and holy crap, I wrote a book. If you're listening to this, I'm assuming it's for one of three reasons. Number one, you are familiar with my YouTube videos and also know me as Superwoman. If so, thanks for supporting me outside of the digital space and allowing me to come through your screen and into your home like that terrifying lady from The Ring. And come to think of it, we have similar hair, so I apologize in advance for that terribly accurate comparison. 7 days. JK, I'm chill. Number two. You're a parent and found this in your child's bedroom, and you're curious. You're also nosy and want to ensure that this book isn't filled with filth that will corrupt your baby's brain. Hey there, I can assure you that this book is family-friendly with a healthy hint of sass. My goal is to inspire your baby to work hard and achieve great things. You should definitely buy 3 more copies and plant them around the house. Number three, you have no idea who I am or you've vaguely heard of me. That's completely fine. Maybe you're a total stranger who just wants to know how to be a boss, or maybe you're looking to add some diversity into your life. Regardless of how you got here, I'm so glad you did. Thank you for spending your valuable time and hard-earned money on this book. For those of you who aren't familiar with me, I'm best known for creating uplifting comedic videos on YouTube, amongst other things. I'm the holder of a psychology degree, an activist for gender equality, an occasional rapper, a sister, a daughter, a unicorn, and now an author. The last few years of my life have been pretty crazy. I've done everything from kissing Seth Rogen while dressed up as my mom, to having my face plastered across Times Square, to helping send girls in Kenya to school. I always knew I wanted to write a book, but I wanted to wait until I felt like I truly had something to say. I'm not that old or wise, so this isn't a memoir. Instead, this book is an accumulation of lessons I've learned that I want to share with you. They are the things that have made me a boss. What's a boss, you ask? Great question. A boss is like a boss, but so epic that I had to change the spelling. Unlike a boss, who is defined as such only within the workplace, a boss is someone who excels in both personal and professional settings. A boss exudes confidence, turns heads, gets hurt efficiently, communicates effectively, and hustles relentlessly. My hope is that this book will unleash your inner boss and give you the tools necessary to not only survive life, but conquer it. This book is divided into 4 sections, each filled with chapters that illustrate a specific theme. Within each chapter, I relay a message I've learned and how you can best apply that lesson to your life. At the end of each section, you'll also see that I've included a feature entitled Out of the Blue. These sections are very important to me because they describe a time in my life when I was fighting depression and also allow me to highlight a moment from my life post-depression. I included these essays because I think it's important to know who you're taking advice from. I want you to know that I've been through some stuff and that the lessons I'm sharing with you in this book were not easily learned. I'm not writing about mythical fairy tale stuff. I'm telling you what has actually worked in my life, the things that pulled me out of a place of deep depression into a life filled with the kind of success I couldn't have ever imagined. Let's be real. 1 billion views on the internet and millions of subscribers don't justify why you should take advice from me. But hopefully these out-of-the-blue sections will. I'm not an expert, and I'm not claiming to be one. However, I've had some truly unique life experiences that have taught me valuable lessons. I'm writing this book for the same reason I started making YouTube videos, because I want to be a positive light in this world. This book isn't merchandise or a check mark on my to-do list. It's much more than that. When I was going through my darkest days, the smallest thing could flip a switch in my brain and change my day from horrible to not so bad. You have dreams and goals you want to achieve. We all do. Maybe you're already on a steady path to success, or maybe you're struggling to make ends meet. Either way, I want this book to flip that switch. I want you to accomplish everything you ever wanted in life. And I truly believe you can. But it won't be easy. Being a boss is hard work. It requires an unfathomable amount of dedication and hustle. The following pages do not contain tricks, quick tips, or get-rich-quick schemes. I'm not going to tell you about any shortcuts or good luck charms. Instead, I'm going to make your work ethic sweat your mind expand, your fear dissolve, and your obstacles crumble. If you're ready to conquer your life, keep listening. It's time to be a boss. I'm rooting for you with all my heart. Lily. This book is not a survival guide filled with hopeful thoughts, lucky charms, or fluffy quotes. There will be no secret schemes to a rewarding life found in this audiobook. That's because success, happiness, and everything else that feels great in life have no escalators. There are only stairs. This book will be your personal trainer guiding you up those stairs. Start stretching. Rules for listening to this audiobook. Number one, like most rules, every rule in this book has an exception. In fact, don't even think of these chapters as rules. Think of them as guidelines. Don't look for the unique scenario that disproves my point. In other words, don't be that annoying person in the YouTube comment section that has to be a Debbie Downer. If I say, smile, don't yell, but what if someone got paralyzed in a bungee jumping accident and fractured their jaw and doesn't have the ability to smile anymore, Lily? Don't focus on finding the loopholes, but instead use that energy and focus on what you can learn. Also, if you got into a bungee jumping accident and only fractured your jaw, you have a lot to smile about. Number two, before you listen to this audiobook, I need you to lay down your defense mechanisms. Take them off and put them away. I'm going to call you out. I'm going to tell you you're slacking. I'm going to shine a spotlight on issues that make you uncomfortable and that you want to avoid. There's no room for excuses, justifications, or pity parties. Listen to these chapters with an open mind and resist the urge to get offended or defensive. Number three, this book has a lot of information in it. I know that because it took me 50 years, an estimation, to write. Don't feel bad if you forget things. In fact, I encourage you to listen to chapters over and over again because becoming a boss is a process that doesn't happen overnight. Take notes and plaster them to your wall. Do whatever you need to do to retain these guidelines. Number four. In a lot of the chapters, I talk about how I apply each boss rule to my life. If you can't relate to these specific scenarios, that's completely fine and understandable. The goal is to understand the general principle and adapt it to your situation. I'm providing you with the framework. It's up to you to tweak it. Number five. Don't get mad at yourself or feel discouraged. This book is an opportunity to call yourself out. Grow, make mistakes, and become better. Listening to this audiobook should be viewed as a journey towards something positive, not an exercise in judgment and criticism. All right, here we go. Start stretching. It's about to get real. Cue Rocky theme song. Are you ready? Please proceed to beat your chest with determination. This is the moment. It would be great if you could clench your fists in preparation. The time is now. Initiate heavy breathing. Bonus points if you squint. Three. You know, maybe even jump a little. Two, roaring noises are encouraged. One, here we go. It's time to be a boss. Part one, master your mind. Our mind is our biggest asset, but also our biggest obstacle. It is the most important tool we possess, but it's useless if we don't know how to apply it. In this section, you'll learn how to befriend your mind, control it, and become more self-aware. Moreover, you'll learn about all the tricks your mind can play on you and how to be the best referee possible. If you want to be a boss, your brain needs to get on board. Chapter 1. Play Nintendo. I'm sweating in my blue overalls as I look at all the obstacles ahead of me. I have three options. Number 1. Pound my head on this brick block and hope for a star. Number 2. Run and jump over the enemy. Or number 3. Step on this turtle's head and force him to retract into a shell. No matter which option I go with, the fact remains that the Koopa Troopa up ahead is going to stay there. I can't control it or convince it that it's actually a Ninja Turtle and thus in the wrong game. That's fine. No Ninja Turtles means more pizza for me, and I'm Italian, so this is all working out. I know the Koopa Troopa isn't going to listen to me, and therefore I need to control the only thing I can. And that's me, Mario! Video games are a great analogy for life. You go through levels, get thrown off by obstacles, and face several enemies. The game will become harder and harder, but it's okay because you become smarter, faster, and more skilled. When playing a video game, you control a character by making it jump, run, duck, and attack. I mean, that was back in my day when my Super Nintendo controller had two buttons. Today, video game controllers have as many buttons as a keyboard, so who knows what you can do. You can probably press A plus Y plus Z while twirling your left joystick and your character will sing the national anthem. Either way, the fact remains that your character is the only thing you can control in the game. The enemies will keep coming, the walls will keep shrinking, and the time will keep ticking away. It's your job to navigate your character through a situation you cannot control. That's exactly how you should view life. A boss understands that there are many things in life you have no control over, and it's inefficient to become frustrated by that reality. Not being able to control people and situations doesn't make you powerless. It just means you have to exercise your power in a different way. If you can't control people, then control your reaction to them. If you can't control a situation, then prepare for it. Before I started my career in the entertainment industry, I was a leader of a small dance company, if you could even call it that, in Toronto. We started off small, with only a few dancers, specializing in Indian dance styles. But over time, in true Lily fashion, I wanted to keep growing and expanding our horizons. Since I was little, I've had larger-than-life ideas. I never wanted to settle for something simple or mediocre, and as a result, when I did things, I wanted them to be the biggest and best things. There were so many other dance teams and companies around, and I didn't want to be just another addition to an already long list. I committed my days to transforming the company in the hopes of creating a dance empire that would take over the world. I mean, I really thought that was possible. We would be the dancing Power Rangers who would save the world one extended leg and pointed toe at a time. I decided to convert my basement into a full-blown office. We held auditions for dancers who were skilled in all forms of dance so we could perform hip-hop, classical, and fusion in addition to what we were already doing. I organized photo shoots and video shoots and other creative marketing techniques. I had so much drive and determination that no injury, financial strain, or competition would steer me off my path. What I couldn't see, however, was the one obstacle that was in front of me the entire time, which caused everything to fall apart. The team itself. See, I had such big dreams for the company, and I was always willing to work for them. Without hesitation, I would pull all-nighters to put together marketing materials, spend money out of my own pocket to invest in what we needed, and drive myself crazy thinking of innovative ways to set ourselves apart. But then I would arrive at practice and deal with three dancers showing up late, one not showing up at all, and two of them leaving early. Getting people to put in work on events to help our brand was like pulling teeth. We often performed at weddings and thus needed to adhere to a professional dress code, yet some dancers would occasionally show up wearing shorts and flip-flops. I would get so frustrated with them because I was putting in so much work for this dream. But the reality of the situation was that the dream was mine, not theirs. I tried for years to control them and make them work for something they didn't care about as much as I did, and it just didn't work. My dance company dreams faded away gradually, but the process was hastened by my discovery of YouTube. I remember feeling a new sensation the first time I uploaded a video. I wrote the script, shot it, edited it, and released it. No one else was involved or required, and the independence was exhilarating. Soon I developed an even greater drive and passion for my career as Superwoman than I'd had previously with my dance team. This time, however, I wasn't trying to control a group of 20 people every time I needed something to get done. The only person I needed to control was the only person I could control, and that was me. Today, of course, I have a team that surrounds me and helps me to build my business. But Lily is still at the root of Superwoman. The success of Superwoman and the failure of my dance team helped me learn a very important lesson. Work with what's in your control. This lesson can be applied to so many situations in our lives. You get frustrated when your parents nag you, so every time they do, you storm out of the room. You can't control your parents, so stop trying. Instead, use that energy to control your reaction the next time they nag you. You might not be able to smash a brick block and find a star that makes you invincible, but you can practice patience and build up a resistance to nagging. And if none of that works, you can find the closest green tube and transport yourself out of the conversation. Have you ever played a video game and then lost because you realized you were looking at the wrong part of the screen the whole time? You were so confused as to why your controller wasn't working, but really you were just trying to control the wrong character. That's what trying to control people is like in real life. We're so often fixated on getting people to behave in accordance to what we want that we forget to focus on ourselves. The best way to stop people from pushing your buttons is to start pushing your own. A plus Y plus Z, left joystick. Oh, Canada! Chapter 2. conquer your thoughts. Touch your nose. No, I'm serious. I want you to stop listening after this sentence and don't resume until you take your right hand and use it to touch the tip of your nose. Do it. Look at you. What an impressive piece of machinery you are. Do you know what you just did? You were introduced to a thought and decided to act on it. Your brain sent signals using neurotransmitters through neurons across your body and into your arm, prompting it to move and touch your magnificent nose. Why did I just make you touch your nose? Because I'm Simon and I run this town. No, but really, it was to show you that you control your mind. Your mind doesn't control you. You successfully directed your brain to touch your nose. Understanding your mind's power is key to being a boss. Imagine using that same type of direction to instruct your mind to stop being negative or jealous or terrified. We often feel that we are slaves to biology. People say things like, I just can't help but feel that way. Or, I can't control being jealous. But I believe that in most situations, we can teach our minds to function with more positivity and efficiency. In other words, by understanding that mushy sponge in our skulls, we can conquer our thoughts. What does conquering your thoughts mean? First, it means you get to wear an awesome warrior costume, so congrats on that victory, #OOTD. Also, it means understanding why you feel the way you feel, what prompts you to carry out certain actions, what causes specific reactions, and what circumstances lead you to make regrettable decisions. Once you discover all the ins and outs of your mind, you basically have the cheat code to your game of life. All you have to do now is input the data, and you have access to extra mental weapons, stronger protection, and new passageways. Notice I said your game of life, and not the game of life. That's because everyone's mind is different. The cheat codes you discover for your mind cannot be applied to all of humanity. I'm not encouraging you to study the biology of the brain, although I mean it is fascinating, but also who has that much time? I'm encouraging you to study your specific psychological makeup. I was forced to learn how to conquer my thoughts because of the nature of my job. For 6 years, I've been posting videos twice a week on the internet. I have over 500 videos on my main channel and 500 videos on my second channel. That's over 1,000 videos for people around the globe to view and judge as harshly as they desire. The internet is wonderful and revolutionary, but let's face it, it can also be extremely cruel. People feel like they can say anything to you when they're sitting comfortably behind their computer screen being completely anonymous. When I first started posting videos, I got a lot of support, mostly because my friends and family would watch and they felt obligated to be nice. Also, I had that second account that I would use to compliment myself. Oops! But with time, I started to receive negative, hateful comments, and I didn't know how to react. Here are a few examples, word for word, without spell check, of the comments I've received. This Lily Singh Paki beep needs to die. She's everywhere. I hate seeing her Bengali Paki face. I hope she gets cancer or her mom dies slowly. Jay, painfully leave, focus, tube, alone, horrible, black beep. This is why women shouldn't have rights. This video gave me cancer. She is so beeping stupid, she only get famous because she hot and that sells, but she is still dumb. I hope someone shoots her. Fun! Do hateful comments still bother me? Sometimes, but not as often. How did I deal with them? When people ask me this, my response is usually, I developed a thick skin. But what I really mean is, I learned how to conquer my thoughts. Here's how I broke it down. People are leaving mean comments. Why? Maybe it's because my videos suck. Do you say mean things to people when you think they suck? No, not unless I'm having a bad day or in a bad mood. Maybe people leaving the negative comments are having a bad day. Maybe that's what the comment is really about. But the comments make me feel insecure. Do you like your videos? Yes. So should your opinion of your videos be dependent on what other people think? Is that the type of person you want to be? Not at all. So it doesn't make sense to let the negative opinions of others impact what you think. Maybe I should stop making videos, though. Does making videos make you happy? Yes, very. Do you believe you should value negative comments above your own happiness? That doesn't sound right. Maybe I should just reply to them. Or you could spend more time replying to people that make you feel good so they're more encouraged to keep supporting you. Now, you might think a combo like this sounds a bit naive. Of course, people want to be happy and ignore negative comments, but it's easier said than done. That's why it's important to closely analyze this conversation and discover all the cheat codes hidden within it. Number one, maybe they're having a bad day. Cheat code one, Lily, when people do or say hurtful things to you, there's a chance that they may be actually upset about something else in their life. Number two, should other opinions impact what you think about yourself? Cheat code two, Lily, sometimes when you hear other opinions, you'll feel pressured to change your own. Before you enter into situations in which you'll be confronted with a lot of opinions, make sure you strongly believe your own. Number three, I don't want to stop making videos because they make me happy. Cheat code three, your happiness is stronger than fear. You can continue battling fear as long as your videos make you happy. Make sure you prioritize creating content that makes you happy. Otherwise, fear and negativity will slowly take over. Number four, maybe I should reply to them. Cheat code four, recognize that replying was suggested to make you feel better. Understand this impulse and catch it before you act on it. Make yourself feel better in a more constructive way. The cheat codes I discovered while dealing with YouTube comments have been useful in so many other areas of my life. When someone cuts me off while driving, I apply cheat code one so that I don't overreact. The person driving could be upset about something else in their life. Cutting me off wasn't about me. When a brand offers me a lot of money to make a video I don't actually like, I implement cheat code three. My content has to make me happy, otherwise negativity will start to seep in. When I'm having an argument and want to make an unnecessary remark to get the last word in, I try to catch myself because I know I'm just trying to make myself feel better. Thus, cheat code four. If I've gotten myself into an upsetting situation, it's usually because I ignored a cheat code or pattern in my behavior. Conquering your thoughts is not a task that can be accomplished overnight or over many nights, to be honest. It's an ongoing process that requires frequent readjustment because your mind is constantly evolving. It requires you to ask yourself a lot of questions and to analyze the answers honestly. From now on, start asking yourself why you feel a certain way, what made you perform a certain action, and how you could do things differently. The information you discover is powerful because it helps to discover patterns and in turn use your mind productively and efficiently. After all, your mind is your most powerful tool, but it's not useful if you don't know how to use it. It's like trying to fix a printer with a stapler. It just doesn't work. Trust me, I've tried. The key is to use a hammer because all printers suck. Chapter 3. Be secretive. My mom once told me, the more details people know about you, the weaker you become. These words of wisdom came between, what did I do to deserve these crazy children? And, you still haven't put music on my iPod. And I've come to learn that she was right. At first, I thought she was being cynical. In my mind, her words translated as, don't trust anyone. But over time, I learned there's a difference between trusting people and allowing yourself to be too vulnerable. Okay, I know there's an L there, I can't pronounce it. Sometimes it is nice and necessary to feel a little vulnerable in relationships, but I don't believe anyone should know everything about you. As long as you're self-aware, it's okay to keep some of your strengths and weaknesses a secret. Now hold on. Do you hear that? It's the sound of people getting ready to defend their relationships. Please stop. I don't have a bartender serving me unlimited cosmos to sit through this right now. Also, why don't I? Note to self, hire a bartender. A healthy relationship of any kind doesn't require telling someone every single detail about yourself. Hear me out. It was another wise mother, like my own, who showed me how powerful the use of selective secrecy can be. Daenerys Targaryen, mother of dragons, first of her name, breaker of chains, and woman crush Wednesday of millions. Now, if you've never watched Game of Thrones, first of all, you should be absolutely ashamed of your ridiculous priorities thus far in life. And second of all, if you plan to start watching it, skip ahead a little in this audiobook because, spoiler alert, you've been warned. Everyone dies. Just kidding. But am I? As I'm writing this, season 6 just came to an end. So let's focus on what's happened thus far. And hopefully by the time this book comes out, I won't be eating my words. Apparently it takes more than a few days to publish a book. Weird. In short, everything seems to be working in the favor of Daenerys. She has a large army, a loyal following, 3 dragons, yes, that's a thing, and great hair. She's on her way to conquer the 7 kingdoms. basically the world, and there is very little standing in her way. In fact, I often hear fans talk about how lucky Daenerys is because solutions just seem to fall into her lap. It's at this point that I stop the entire conversation, turn off the lights, start up my PowerPoint presentation, and thoroughly explain why Daenerys isn't lucky, she's just super smart and understands the power of being secretive. In fact, it would be great if you could also turn off the lights and listen to this with a lamp for dramatic effect. Oh, wait. Season 1, Episode 1. We are first introduced to Daenerys in the scene where her brother speaks down to her in a disrespectful manner and she says nothing to defend herself. She just listens to him obediently and therefore leaves the viewer to assume she is weak, impressionable, and easily taken advantage of. Before this emotional scene ends, something very important yet very minor happens. In fact, it's so minor that my fellow Game of Thrones fanatic friend didn't even realize it happened until I gave my imaginary PowerPoint presentation. So, what happens? She takes a bath. Ah! Right? But not just any bath. The water is very clearly steaming hot. In fact, as she enters the tub, we hear her servant say, "My lady, the water is too hot." But Daenerys still enters without hesitation. End scene. Are you still with me? I promise this is going somewhere. Fast forward a few episodes, and in true Game of Thrones fashion, things have escalated quickly. Daenerys' evil brother is killed by molten metal right before her eyes. She watches intently as her brother is burned to death, but her only comment is, "He was no dragon. Fire cannot kill a dragon." End scene. Stay with me now. For her wedding, Daenerys is gifted with 3 dragon eggs. These are merely decorative ancient items, or so it seems. We see Daenerys staring at the eggs while also holding them near a fire. All right, cool. Another moment where Daenerys is in her own world, staring into a fire like a lunatic, right? Wrong. The scene ends with her passing the eggs back to her servant, except the servant's hands instinctively recoil because the eggs are too hot. She's unable to hold them without getting burned. Unlike Daenerys. So, what's my point? Daenerys didn't obtain some dragon power one day by luck. She knew she had dragon blood within her all along, but she never told anyone until she could capitalize on that power. While she was being forced into marriage, beaten, and disrespected, she held on to the knowledge that she was the mighty mother of dragons. Daenerys kept her strengths and powers a secret from everyone, including her brother and husband, until it was the perfect moment for her to make her move. Had she disclosed her powers from the beginning, her brother might have tried killing her, people might have tried kidnapping her, and she probably wouldn't have been gifted with dragon eggs. That'd be like giving Thor a hammer and expecting him not to use it. Daenerys knew her own power and kept it a secret so that she could deploy that power as effectively as possible. And she uses this strategy repeatedly to get what she wants. Long story short, if you're selectively secretive, you might become queen, have dragons, and get to sleep with a very sexy man named Khal Drogo who rides a horse. Now, I know what you're thinking. Your life isn't Game of Thrones, and your skill set might not include being the mother of dragons. Though, I mean, being really good at Pokemon Go is still pretty cool. Trust me, I get it. At least once a week, I get pissed that I don't have dragons. Nor am I suggesting that tolerating abuse is necessary to succeed. What I'm saying is, you must think of yourself as a powerful fort. That's how you should view your mind, body, and spirit. You should know all the entrances and secret passageways of your fort, aka your strengths, weaknesses, fears, etc. Feel free to welcome people into your fort for banquets or balls or whatever other fancy party you might have. But the more you tell people about your fort, the more information you reveal about the secret passageways, the weaker your fort becomes and the easier it is for people to attack you. The lesson being, don't give away all your secrets or reveal all of your vulnerabilities. You know what I'm saying. Don't trick yourself into believing that you are obligated to share everything with everyone. It's up to you to decide what to reveal and when. Wow, I guess you were right, Mom, about this and about me not putting music on your iPod. I'll do it later, I promise. Chapter 4, Get Uncomfortable. Someone smart once said, "Everything you want is just outside your comfort zone." To be honest, I don't know who said it, so let's just pretend I am that smart person. I said it. Yay me! It was actually said by Robert G. Allen, best-selling author, but whatever. Being uncomfortable is usually considered a bad thing. When you think of the word discomfort, you might think of, say, a crowded elevator full of sweaty people. Or you might picture a creepy guy who keeps smirking at you from across the room. Or maybe you're watching TV with your parents and Nicki Minaj's music video for Anaconda starts playing. Uncomfortable. Also, why is there a gym in the jungle? However, putting yourself in uncomfortable situations is crucial to developing new skills and gaining valuable experience. I know Drake told you he went from 0 to 100 real quick, but I promise you he went from 0 to 1 to 2 to 2.2 to 3. It was only after he put himself in a lot of uncomfortable situations that he finally hit 100. In fact, early in his career, Drake got booed off stage in his hometown. Sounds pretty uncomfortable. Also, who boos Drake? I can confidently say that I'm skilled at making YouTube videos, and that's only because I went through the horrifying experience of making my first 10 videos. I had to go through the awkward process of figuring out what works and what doesn't. Although it was terrifying, if I hadn't made those first 10 videos, I would never have been able to make the 500 videos that are online today and that now have over 1 billion views combined. It's easy to look back and see how far I've come, but it's harder to remember that I need to keep pushing myself. If I know that stepping outside my comfort zone helped me with YouTube success, then why am I so scared to do it again when auditioning for film roles? Well, I answered my own question. Because it's scary, and sitting in a tense room reciting lines to a complete stranger isn't exactly a comfortable situation. It's times like these when you need to bounce up. You have to seek out situations that make you uncomfortable and then throw yourself into them. That doesn't mean risking your life by walking on the edge of a building. I mean, you don't need to do everything that scares you or makes you uncomfortable. Instead, push yourself to do things that will help you reach your goal. And if your goal is to walk on the edge of a building, then dude, that's rad as F. Also, you're crazy and I want to send your mom an edible arrangements basket in sympathy. One of my goals is to act in movies. Now, I haven't been to acting school and I don't have much experience on large film sets. So you can imagine my fear when my manager called to tell me I've been asked to audition for a major role in a high budget movie. I'd be lying if I said a little pee didn't escape my body. My initial instinct was to say, hell no, because I was terrified and let's be real, there was zero chance I would land that role. They would definitely want a more experienced and qualified actress to be part of such a huge franchise. I can't say exactly which movie it was, shout outs to my lawyer, so let's just assume it's a movie about battles that take place in outer space. Yes, that one. Luckily for me, my schedule conflicted with the audition and I found an excuse not to go. What a lovely, comfortable situation. 2 weeks later, my manager phoned me again to say the casting director wanted to book another audition time with me. Now, I'm not a big believer in fate, but when something comes your way twice, you can't help but think Beyonce, Kelly, and Michelle are in the air, because baby, that's destiny. I mustered up the courage and told them, sure, sealing the deal on my uncomfortable demise. The morning of the audition, I sat down and had a talk with myself. I reminded myself that the first 10 times I do anything, I'm horrible at it. But those first 10 times are crucial in order for me to be successful, or a little better, the 11th time. It's not about getting the role. It's about doing the audition. And as long as I leave the audition without having spontaneously combusted, I will have succeeded. I walked into the building and instantly wanted to pass out. It was filled with gorgeous girls who didn't seem to be nervous whatsoever. In fact, I smiled at one and she gave me the cold shoulder. QP escaping body, round two. I checked in, sat down, and took deep breaths. I didn't get to see any of the script in advance, so I had to learn the entire thing at the audition. Also, minor detail, but I know nothing about this outer space franchise, so reading a script about galaxies with weird names only added to my stress. Is this the name of a main character, or did someone sneeze? Send help! After I'd spent an hour memorizing difficult paragraphs, they called my name and I went into the torture chamber. I mean, audition room. I introduced myself and then the audition quickly began. I started reciting lines only to mess up a few sentences in. Okay, keep calm, Lily. Damn, this was really hard and my brain was racing. But I tried again. Within the space of a few minutes, I did the scene twice. And the second time around, I didn't forget any of my lines. More importantly, I was still alive. Afterward, the casting agent and I had a great conversation, and she told me that she was really impressed with my performance. Was she lying? I don't care. The point is, I did it. I didn't spontaneously combust as if Harry Potter were in the corner all like, reducto. I walked out of that audition and felt amazing. Needless to say, I didn't get the part. I mean, if I was part of a major movie franchise, would I be sitting here in this crappy rented apartment eating two-day-old pizza? No. The answer is no. Actually, maybe. Wait! Oh my god, I get it. Nicki Minaj, there's a gym in the jungle because it's called a jungle gym. Holy crap, I'm a genius. Back to my point. The next time I have a difficult audition, I'm going to feel a tad better about it because of this experience. It'll keep getting a little easier and a little less terrifying each time. To succeed at something, you have to step out of your comfort zone inch by inch. Think of discomfort as currency. It's the price you pay to learn some pretty crucial things. Besides, the goal isn't always the trophy. The goal can be the stepping stones, the bronze, and the silver medals that bring you closer to the gold. Remember, on the path to success, fear and discomfort are only speed bumps. Don't make them dead ends. May the gravity be with you. Wait, that's how it goes, right? All right, now listener, I want to try something with you. Let's get uncomfortable. What are three things you know you need to do in order to succeed, but find absolutely terrifying? Think of three. Oh, wait. Chapter 5. Have fewer emotions. Emotions are great if you're at a wedding, a funeral, or your kid's graduation, or while watching The Lion King. It's a wonderful blessing to be in situations that evoke real emotion. Your baby girl is walking on stage looking like an adult, being handed her diploma, and you shed a tear. She's all grown up now. Also, her tuition fees left you broke, and now your TV is an iPod with a magnifying glass in front of it. It's also overwhelming and bittersweet. You should cry your heart out. But when you're in a situation in which work needs to get done, put those emotions away. Emotions can cloud your judgment and reduce productivity. That's not my opinion. It's a fact. A fact that I just made up, but it's probably 100% scientifically accurate. I'm not suggesting you be a heartless robot, but I am encouraging you to have selective emotions when tasks need to get done, especially in a group setting. Maybe there are 10 valid reasons to be upset with your life right now, but in the middle of a shoot, with a crew of 10 people who all have a job to get done, getting angry or offended will not help. It's extremely difficult to do, but a boss understands the importance of having tunnel vision. Sometimes you have to block out distracting emotions in order to get things done, especially if other team members are relying on you. I get a little, aka very, crazy when I'm in creation mode. I want to make magic. And when I'm calling the shots, I practice a tunnel vision so intense that my peripherals couldn't even sense a bird flying towards my head. It's a blessing and a curse. Beaks are sharp. I have more piercings than I'd like. When I was on the set of my music video, Le, my friend and co-producer Humble and I were on the same page when it came to craziness. Like me, he's very goal-oriented and believes that limiting your range of emotions will go a long way when you're trying to complete a task. That's why we work so well together. We both act like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz when we're on set. No heart, all determination. The only difference is we couldn't care less about Dorothy unless she's involved with our project. However, we understand that not everyone is like that. Before we started shooting, we had a meeting with the entire cast and crew in hopes of setting a certain tone on set. We made it very clear that we all had a deadline and time was not on our side. We were trying to shoot an entire music video featuring a lot of moving parts. Cars, extras, props, and several costume changes in just a few hours. As a result, communication on set was going to be very blunt and to the point because we didn't have time for pleasantries. We also made it clear that everything that happened while shooting, from a director yelling to a scene needing to be redone, would be for the benefit of the project. The completion of the project would be our only priority for the next few hours, and no one had any other side agendas. If you got yelled at, it was because things needed to get done faster. For the good of the project, not because someone wanted to upset Kim. No one has upset Kim on their to-do list. So Kim, don't trip. The result was a very efficient shoot. Yeah, people got yelled at, including me, by Humble and vice versa, but no one's feelings were hurt. We were lucky to have a team of people who were able to put their emotions to the side for the day. But that's not always the case. While I was on tour last year, I faced some very stressful situations. Sometimes, just moments before a show, a costume would go missing, a dancer wasn't ready, or better yet, my earpiece would stop working. Before one show, one of my crew members got frustrated and started crying because she couldn't access a dressing room. When anyone would try to help her, she would brush them off and say she was fine, which clearly she was not. In a situation where 14 other people are relying on you to do your part and get work done, emotions are the last thing you want to display. Not only does it create a negative energy, but it also affects your work. Now, you might be thinking that I sound like a total jerk. And you know what? That's fair. Humans have emotions, and they can't always control them. The thing is, I'm not suggesting that you become mechanical and turn off your heart. I am suggesting that you train your brain to focus less on feelings and more on productivity when things need to get done. When you need to get your hustle on, be driven by goals, not emotions. When you're working with a group and feel any type of negative emotion, ask yourself, does this emotion help get the task done? If not, then put it away. Sometimes we get angry or annoyed at people we're working with, and so we retaliate. Ask yourself again, does retaliation help get the task done? It's a hard pill to swallow, but in a battle between pride and productivity, sometimes you need to let your pride loose. It's not about rights and wrongs when you have 2 hours left to capture 4 more hours of footage. It's about getting it done. A perfect example of someone who has a handle on their emotions when it counts is my day-to-day manager, Kyle. He's a recent member of my team, and hopefully by the time you're listening to this, he's still kicking it with me and hasn't left me to become president of the world, which is very possible. Don't get it twisted. Kyle is very emotional. In fact, on our trip to Kenya, he was the first to cry during our nightly reflections. Twice. But when it comes to work, Kyle is great at putting his emotions and pride away and getting the job done. When there's some miscommunication within my team that results in a mistake, Kyle will apologize even if it's not his fault. There have been many times when an issue has had nothing to do with Kyle, but he recognized the stress it brought to me and apologized anyways while helping find a solution. He recognizes that reducing my stress allows me to be my best creative self, which is beneficial to everyone on the team. Productivity over pride. Elevation over ego. If you're in a situation where you've completed a task successfully and still feel uncomfortable with the way someone treated or talked to you, then by all means communicate it to them. No one is asking you to be a doormat. You should be comfortable telling people how you'd like to be treated. Just don't have this conversation in the middle of a chaotic work situation. Could you imagine an entire crew running around, paperwork flying everywhere, 7 people yelling how much time we have left, and then in the middle of all of that, having someone approach you and say, "I'd like to talk to you about how I feel right now." This is not Full House. Do not cue the sentimental music. There's a time and a place. From a professional standpoint, we've established it's best not to let your inner emojis affect your productivity. But what about from a personal standpoint? In this case, we can be a little more lenient because no one is relying on you to get work done except you, and maybe your parents if you still live at home. Do I believe you should have fewer emotions when dealing with personal struggles? Well, yes and no. No, because emotions need to be felt and it's not healthy to bottle up pain. I believe in crying your eyes out instead of having pent-up anger. But I'd also argue that, yes, having too many emotions can blind us to the life lessons we could be learning when things fall apart. Basically, I believe in getting hurt efficiently. This means that I thoroughly believe in crying, yelling, pulling my hair out, and experiencing heartache. But once I'm done, I dissect the pain and learn lessons from it. Heartache is never going to go away, and every person will continue to experience it. Not learning anything from pain because you're too overwhelmed with emotion is inefficient, especially since you'll continue to encounter pain in life. When you get hurt, use that hurt as body armor for future battles. That doesn't mean you close yourself off and turn into an ice queen or king. It simply means that you should reason with yourself and try to remember that getting hurt today makes you more resilient tomorrow. Pain is good. Heartache is good. These things provide you with knowledge that will help you grow and deal with future struggles. To waste a painful moment and let emotion overwhelm you so much that you gain absolutely no insight is to get hurt inefficiently. Make every struggle count, and remember that experience will always be the silver lining. There are so many reasons to get emotional in life. Phoebe and Joey didn't end up together in the series finale of Friends. During his speech at the MTV Video Music Awards, Drake admitted to being in love with Rihanna since he was 22, He was 29 when he said those words. That's 7 years in the friend zone. The original Yellow Power Ranger no longer walks this earth. 3 iPhone releases from now, Apple will yet again change the shape of the charging port and we'll all cave and buy new accessories. If you want to cry over every mildly upsetting thing to ever occur in your spare time, feel free. Although, that sounds pretty exhausting. When it comes to getting work done and having the opportunity to learn lessons, don't let your emotions rob you. Chapter 6. Don't overthink. Thinking is great. I love thinking. I bet teddy bears are so pissed that they can't think like us. Except Ted, obviously. Speaking of which, Ted is a great example of not overthinking since it's a movie about a talking bear who gets married to a human woman. Hashtag love wins. Unfortunately, though, we don't always follow our gut. Sometimes when we're passionate about something or in some kind of bind, we tend to think a lot about the what, where, when, how, and why of the situation, to the point that it becomes unproductive. It happens to the best of us. Overthinking is a natural enemy of efficiency because it prevents us from getting things done. A boss should know when to take the time to think something through and when to simply make a quick decision. Going in circles will never get you anywhere. I mean, unless you're the Earth, in which case you're all right. For example, your boyfriend tells you he wants to talk. Before you call him, you spend 45 minutes thinking about how the conversation will play out. What if he cheated on me? What if I accidentally cheated on him and I didn't realize it? Maybe I was drunk. Maybe he has pictures. Maybe I'm on TMZ. Oh my God, what if he has cancer? Oh my God, he's actually a robot. I knew it. I'm dating the robot from Big Hero 6. None of these thoughts are helpful. What you need to do is simply pick up the phone and call your boyfriend. And when you do, you may feel silly and realize how much time you wasted worrying when he asks, "Can you drive tonight?" When it comes to creating my weekly YouTube content, I try my best not to overthink it. I could never make 2 videos a week if I sat at my desk and thought about every single frame, shot, and sentence over and over again. My weekly videos would turn into yearly videos. Therefore, when I partner up with companies to shoot branded content, it's always a bit of a struggle on my part. I mean, for legal reasons, I understand why companies have to focus on minor details and chew them over. People love to sue, especially in America. I also understand that companies have big production budgets, so they feel obligated to spend money on all the small details that I don't think are all that important when it comes to online content. We're from different worlds. I remember one particular video shoot that followed a very basic storyline. I was supposed to do an intro, surprise someone, and have a conversation with them. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. The next few hours were spent shooting this very simple video, even though the shoot could have easily gotten done in 30 minutes. Why did it take so long? The set designer was constantly adjusting a plant or vase that would end up completely blurred out in the background of the shot. The videographer wanted 3 different shots of a basic motion. Now all of this is fine. I get it. You have cool toys you want to play with. But simply having the ability and equipment to do something doesn't justify that it should be done. And all of this overthinking was causing the storyline to suffer. There were times when I was the only person in the room who had the ability to say, hey, that shot ruins the entire surprise. The response would be, oh yeah, that. The story should be the priority, first and foremost. Can the audience follow what's happening? Are we making it clear? Because if we aren't, it doesn't matter if this Steadicam shot with the strobe lights and well-positioned plant in the background look great. It's important to recognize when time is being wasted and to take a step back. Taking a step back is so important. In fact, we should make it a viral dance video online. Take a step back now. Take a step back. Hey, I can already see it hitting a billion views. Oh, wait. I guess that's similar to Lean Back by Fat Joe. Fine. Whatever. Take away my joy, Joe. Humans have a tendency to overcomplicate simple things because we overthink them. But if you take a step back and remember your priorities, it becomes easier to make a decision. When you're in these situations, I encourage you to ask yourself basic questions while keeping your priorities in mind. If you care about money, ask yourself, does this job pay well? If you care about mental health, ask yourself, does this job make me happy? Ask questions that align with your priorities and ignore all the other noise. If your priority is an amazing product, it doesn't matter if 14 people worked hard on it or if you spent a ton of time on it. The question you should ask is this an amazing product? And then base your next actions on that answer. Sometimes we overthink things to avoid the fact that there is no feel-good decision to make. The first time I had a major problem with one of my employees, I drove myself crazy overthinking the issue. Why do they keep making this mistake? What can I do differently? How can I penalize them? How do I train them better? I went to bed every night thinking, there's just no solution to this problem. But in reality, the solution was to fire them. I just didn't like that solution, and therefore I refused to consider it. But overthinking things didn't help them or me. Sometimes the right thing is also the hard thing. The next time you find yourself going around in circles, ask yourself, are you a Ferris wheel? What about a merry-go-round? Can you please confirm that you are not a merry-go-round? I'm assuming you're not. And if so, jealous? Ponies are dope. In that case, stop going around in circles and instead take advantage of your valuable time and make some tough decisions. Step out of the complicated maze you've created and take a one-way street to Claritville. Things can be simple when you take a step back. Take a step back. Now take a step back. Hey, F it, Fat Joe. I'm coming for you. Chapter 7. Call Yourself Out. Making mistakes is cool. There seems to be this misconception that making mistakes makes you weak or stupid or somehow less of a person. But the truth is, making mistakes brings you one step closer to success. No one has the answer key to life. And so when we want to accomplish something, whether it's learning a new braid or becoming the CEO of a marketing company, we must make mistakes along the way. It's the only way we can learn what works and what doesn't. The person who invented the first phone didn't create an iPhone 7, and I'm sure the first person to invent the parachute had a few bruises. If you're making mistakes, you're making the necessary moves to figuring it all out. If you think there are 10 possible ways to do something and you just made a mistake, congratulations! You just discovered that number 4 doesn't work. That's progress! If you're not making mistakes, you're not taking any steps towards accomplishing a goal. Mistakes are cool. Mistakes don't exist just to make us feel bad about ourselves. They are opportunities that we should not ignore or shy away from. People pay thousands of dollars in tuition to learn lessons at college, while all the time mistakes are lingering around for free, ready to school us. The goal is to recognize our mistakes, learn from them, and try to prevent them in the future. To do this, I've come up with 4 steps. Number 1, take ownership. Taking ownership of a mistake is like attending a class. It's the only way you'll learn from it. If you can't admit to a mistake, you're skipping school and wasting your tuition. Owning up is difficult for a lot of people because it requires disarming defense mechanisms such as pride, fear, and ego, just to name a few. As a result, people resort to insane behaviors to address mistakes without taking the hit. For example, if you were supposed to submit a project by 4 p.m., here are a few common ways to not take ownership. First, the blame game. For example, I didn't hand in the project because Carl from Human Resources didn't remind me. He said he would. Second, deflect. For example, well, Samantha didn't hand in her project either. Third, deny. For example, I didn't know there was a project due today. Fourth, ignore. For example, at 7 p.m., here's my project. Bye! Not only is this behavior frustrating for people who work with you, it robs you of the power to come up with a solution. If you admit to making a mistake, you can work on fixing it. But if you deny the entire thing, who's going to solve the issue? A boss doesn't use defense mechanisms to get out of cleaning up a mess they made. Nor do they take half ownership for things. Here's an example of half ownership. Hey, I'm sorry my project is late. Yeah, Carl was supposed to remind me, but he didn't. Even still, I'm really sorry. Now here's boss ownership. I know the project was due at 4 p.m. and it is now 7 p.m. For that, I am sorry and no excuse is valid. Number 2. Call yourself out. If you didn't hand in the project on time, ask yourself why, before someone else does. You should know yourself best, so why wait until someone else calls you out to scramble to find the answer? Before you answer to your boss, answer to your inner boss. You should want to identify the cause of your mistake so that you can understand how to prevent it. Not because your supervisor is going to need an explanation. And when you give yourself a reason for why you made a mistake, be real and honest. I say this because sometimes we use the best defense mechanisms against ourselves. For example, you might tell yourself you didn't do the project because you didn't have enough time. That might be true, but what did you do instead? Did you go to a party? Did you hang out with your boyfriend? Did you binge watch Orange is the New Black? If you're nodding your head, then that's the real reason you didn't hand in your project. You didn't prioritize your work. When you make mistakes, call yourself out honestly. Honesty is the new black. Number 3, find solutions. Mistakes are valuable only if you discover how to prevent them from happening again. If your next 3 projects are all late, then you didn't really learn much from your mistake, did you? Once you honestly identified the cause of your mistake, come up with a solution. If the reason is that you didn't have enough time, then make a schedule that gives you enough time. Create a reward system that allows you to go to a party if you finish X amount of work. You cannot keep doing the same thing and expect different results. That's the definition of insanity. You need to find solutions, and not just fairy tale solutions like try harder, but real solutions like cancel my monthly subscription. Oh snap, ish just got real. Number 4, communicate. Once you learn how to take ownership, call yourself out honestly, and find solutions, you can learn to apologize efficiently in a meaningful way. No mistake is too big or too small to apologize for, and no ego should be too big to make that apology. The biggest mistake you can make is thinking an apology doesn't matter. An apology indicates that you care, and to be blunt, you're a responsible adult and not a 6-year-old child. So whether you did something small, like forget to respond to an email, or something much larger, like hurt a friend, take the time to deliver an honest apology and explain how you'll prevent your mistake from happening again in the future. Here's an example of a whack apology. I'm sorry, next time I won't ask Carl to remind me about the project. When he forgets, it's frustrating for everyone. Nah, you can do better than that. Stop being whack sauce. Here's a boss apology. I'm sorry my project is late. I take complete ownership for the delay. I've already come up with ways to ensure I get things done on time in the future. You can expect better. All right, Carl, you're off the hook. Whether receiving an award or admitting to a mistake, a boss will stand up tall because they understand that both contribute toward growth and progress. When you have the guts to make mistakes, great things happen. And when you have the integrity to take ownership of those mistakes, the people around you will take notice. So F up, empower your inner referee, call yourself out, and move one step closer to success. Chapter 8, Send the GPS Deep. Sometimes I'm midway through my day and I discover I have a stain on my shirt. And by sometimes, I mean daily, because I'm an animal. So what do? I cover it up with a jacket or decorative pin. Problem solved. Similarly, when I have a pimple, also almost daily, I cover it up with concealer. When I spill my drink on the carpet and the stain won't go away, I buy a new plant and conveniently place it on top. It works out great until I spill my drink 4 more times and my living room starts looking like something out of Jumanji. For most slip-ups in life, it's easy to find solutions that simply cover up the problem. But when it comes to your professional, personal, and behavioral problems, a cover-up won't cut it. You need to go beyond blanket solutions and get to the root of the problem. You should know yourself so well that it would be easy to draw an IKEA instruction manual for yourself. Yes. I said IKEA instruction manual and easy in the same sentence. There's a first for everything. Part of conquering your mind, see chapter Conquer Your Thoughts, and knowing yourself is sending the GPS deep and addressing your inner issues. When it comes to understanding our behavior and why we do the things we do, I believe each of us has a minimum of 3 layers. Surprise, you're a tiramisu. The top layer consists of how we explain ourselves and our actions to other people. This is the easiest layer of the tiramisu to digest because it's light and fluffy and makes the dessert look pretty. The middle layer consists of how we explain our actions to ourselves. This layer is a bit heavier and deeper, and oftentimes you can't see it from the outside because it's just below the whipped cream. Finally, we reach the bottom layer, which consists of the deeply rooted reasons we actually behave the way we do. This layer is the hardest to find because it's buried deep within your tiramisu, and you have to push aside all the other layers to discover it. It doesn't always taste the best, and it's definitely not the prettiest, but it's the foundation of the entire dessert. Now that I've made you hungry and want to take a bite out of your own arm, let me show you what I mean with an example from my own life. My behavior. I tell everyone that I don't want to be in a relationship right now. Layer 1. What I tell other people. I'm too busy hustling and sipping on that lemonade that Beyonce served. I don't need no man. snapping fingers. Layer 2, what I tell myself. I love my career way too much, and I don't have time to waste on a relationship. That type of commitment would hold me back from achieving my